have a rock and roll party.
Come on, boy.
Abbey Road Records show.
Heavy metal, rock and roll is always going to be with us. Day after day, year after year, it's never going to die.
Who likes rock and roll? Yeah!
Abbey Road Records show.
Put down the boxing gloves and try and just get it together.
Well, Alex Lifeson is needs to step away from his copy of The Police Regatta de Blanc on this track from Moving Pictures, Rush. Yeah,
he bought a Police album or two, right?
Yeah, they went into The Police at this point.
Yeah, well into it.
Yeah. Wait, the 81? 1981 Moving Pictures?
What is it, 81?
I think so, yeah. A classic. A Stone Cold classic. You got a new copy there. You got some reissued 180-gram version. Look at you.
It's a gift, yes. I've been told, as everyone knows, who listens to the show regularly. I still don't know enough about them to tell you what year that is. And the writing on it's so fucking small. And I am blind as a bat. And, of course, you know, it's dank and it's dark in this shithole.
True.
So, I mean, in this fine establishment.
Is this as far as your record collection goes in the Rush catalog? Do you have signals?
It goes
signals?
Up to the one with the... No, the one with the guy standing on the brain.
Oh, that was before this.
Okay, then yes.
Okay, that was Hemispheres.
Okay, what came after this?
Signals.
I don't have that one.
Grace Under Pressure.
I was told to leave those one alone.
Well, yeah, they're not bad. I mean, if you like this one, you would like everything up to through Grace Under Pressure.
This is one of my least favorite by them, just because they're getting a little synthy and a little bit 80s-ish.
Yeah, and you don't really need to hear Tom Sawyer, Red Barchetta, Limelight, or YYZ ever again.
Right. You know, and although, yeah, this is kind
all
of...
All of Side One is gone.
Their breakout pop album, if you will. And pop meaning popular, not pop style, obviously.
Yeah.
But, you know, mainstream radio when they first got a hold of Rush. Like, oh, yeah. Look at that.
I'll take my Caress of Steel.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Give me that one.
Yeah, one of the first three are good.
Yeah, this is too, I don't know, synthy.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. A little bit too thinky.
Just like last week's episode.
What do you hear this week's episode?
All right, well, let's get cracking.
Well, I like cracking.
Well, hey, Laba.
Hey, Laba.
The Shabby Road Record Show is on the air, your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay, and I approve this message. I am joined by a walking, talking super PAC known as A.D. Adams.
Well, that's me, a super PAC. That was one of my films,
that's
as
right.
You well know. Yeah. Yes, I was...
back when you had abs.
Yeah. No, that's not the pack we're talking about here.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Sorry.
Well, here we are on a rare rainy day outside the fortified confines of our disgusting but beloved Shabby Road studio. And as the raindrops wash away the despair, the doomed, the damned, the desperate, and the dying, all we can do is huddle for shelter and perhaps hopefully get a free shower out of the deal.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
All right.
Thank God we're in here, though.
Right.
We're high and dry.
Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in.
Can't stress the high part enough, though.
This is episode 104.
Four.
Woo-wee, we're getting up there. And once again, thank you for sharing on Facebook and on our new Twitter account, and also leaving us iTunes reviews, which is oh so helpful in spreading the word about the Shabby Road Record Show. So if you're thinking about it, go over there to iTunes and leave us a glowing review, 5 stars, please.
A growing review.
Yes, indeed. And let's see who we got here tonight. We got Ricky Serrano running the controls. What's up, Ricky?
You know.
Stuff.
Like stuff.
Stuff and things.
Awesome stuff.
Yes, and speaking of stuff and things, HAL 5000 is here. And who do we have on the Astrovan bench seat over there?
Well, there's plenty of room for you tonight, huh? We have Liquid Mistress Liz Morgan over there, and she's got some new drinks, I guess, right? I believe it all has to do with Fireball. We got Dragon Balls, or what's that called?
Dragon Blood.
Which
Dragon
is
Balls. Another one of your
Dragon
films.
Balls, yes.
Yeah. Hashtag AD Films.
Which is? cranberry, little tart. I would add maybe a little bit of pineapple juice to sweeten that up a little bit. Cut the edge off that. Just a little alcoholic advice there.
All right there, Wolfgang Puck.
Right? Yes.
Also, you guys, if you want to get something printed up on your Dragon Balls, make sure you go over to nameonanything.com.
Well, absolutely. Let's say, you know, they'll put your name on anything. Your name, logo, whatever you want. They'll put it on anything, anywhere. So let's say you're at an orgy or at a nudist camp, for instance. So, yeah, there's no way you're going to stick a pin in your chest like you would if you had like a stick-on name tag, right, with the pins on them.
That works.
Yeah, so you don't want to pin your titty or your chest.
No,
so
no.
It creates blood and pain.
At nameonanything.com, right, and you'll save 10% if you mention Shabby Road Record Show as you're putting your order together with those fine folks over there. They'll take great care of you, so go visit them today.
Yes, absolutely. I knew a guy whose name was Dick once. Guess where he put his name tag?
Okay.
On his forehead. Okay.
All right.
You can also go to the Shabby Road. I've had a busy few days. I've written nothing. I'm just winging this. So my sense of humor is gone. As a matter of fact, I'm half asleep and drunk yet.
You had a sense of humor? When was this? I missed that.
I rented one. I borrowed one from an ex. you can go to the Shabby Road website, www.shabbyroadrecordshow.com, and you can buy us a beer. Click all the way down, scroll down where it says fill the fridge. Click on there and get us, buy us a round or a tall cold one or a full-on 18-pack, and we'll slurp that up quicker than you can say Jackie Robinson.
Somebody actually did that for us here tonight, AD.
Jackie Robinson?
Yes, somebody is going to make us drink like Jackie Robinson, and I don't know that reference, but we'll just go with it.
Oh, yeah.
Gary Gilson, G-Man.
G-Man!
Did it again.
All right, thanks, G-Man.
Yeah, he went to that website and did what AD just said. He did that very exact thing.
Wow,
so thank you, G-Man.
Like a mind reader.
And he's going for that Enabler Award for sure this year.
Oh, he's going to
be
for
a tight
it,
race.
Yeah, man.
How's your mystery box looking?
Dude, I have a pretty strong box.
Nice.
In a non-odiferous kind of way. I mean, it's rather eclectic, certainly.
Good.
But I think it's got great cuts. From sort of not so mainstream artists, of course, we're not known as mainstream, you know, spinners of vinyl here anyway, but bands you probably heard of, but they're sort of B names. And, you know, I got one from Rocker from 82, highly influential contenders in the new wave of British heavy metal, real super rockin' number. I got one from 1973 from a well-known name. Whereas no one knows their work except for one song. Serious golden earring syndrome on this one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But great, great track from a great, great album. And I've been listening to it endlessly, and it's just growing on me. Like the fungus that's growing on my shoe, it looks like right now. And then I've got a really cool poppy, sweet little poppy, clever little poppy track from 2015. From a brand new album
I just
picked up, something new, awesome and poppy. Band's been around since 1999, but it seems like the entire world, and I'm talking about England and every country around them, America, Canada, the entire world missed the boat on this band, and we're going to fix that tonight.
Oh, wow. I'm excited for that.
Yes,
that's cool.
You should be. So you should be.
Well, my box is looking it's a strong, strong box. I'm rocking tonight. And, you know, I feel like I've veered off in the last few weeks. And so now it's time for me to get back on track and just throw some real hard-hitting numbers right at you. And I got
– our boxes go well together.
Yes.
In a non-lesbian kind of way.
Your fingers made like a scissoring.
Like scissoring. Scissor me timbers, Ryan.
Oh, scissor me timbers. My first one's from 72. A powerhouse song fronted by a chick with an amazing voice and something that most people probably have never heard of. And I can't wait to play it. It's got such shabby history involved in it. It's great. My next one is a follow-up to an album that I brought, way back when the first season of Shabby Road Record Show, if you will. We played this band, and I did manage to find their second record. Very difficult to find. That's from 73. So I got a 72, a 73, and my last record is from 1974.
Oh, the hat trick there.
A classic and generally maligned and or overlooked record from this band that I think it's pretty interesting, and can't wait to talk about it because I want to get people's opinions on it. But it's a fantastic record to me. It's very fascinating. But yeah, it's cool. We'll get to it. It's awesome.
All right.
Lots of great stories, too.
I think between your box and my box, like style-wise, what it sounds like is we got a good show going, because I know mine is not the hard rocking stuff that when we call it hard rocking.
Yeah.
You've got that tonight. So we're halfway there already.
Uh-huh.
And then mine are eclectic enough where that's just – I think it's going to be a really – could be a good show depending on what each of us brought.
It
I mean,
could be.
Yeah, it never is, but it could be.
Tonight's the night.
I'm feeling pretty giddy about it.
Ricky's got the two playing cards. You know how it goes. It's the red side and the black side of the room. Ricky's got one card representing each behind his back. He's shuffling them as we speak. It's almost like you can hear them being shuffled. Well done.
You actually can. Wow, that's not even fake.
And AD, why don't you pick left or right hand?
Let's go right hand.
Red.
That's me.
Go for it, man.
All right,
it's all you.
We're going to start off with this one. An album that came out in June of 1982 on Mercury Records in the United States and Bronze Records in the UK. This band was formed in 1978 and is still rocking their balls off. They've been literally touring nonstop since 1978.
What?
They have not taken a break. No hiatus. And in those years, what's that, 38 years?
Yeah.
They have three of their original members. Now, one left, came back, but two were there the entire time. And that in itself is fucking amazing. And then you take all the other members totaled. There was only 10 members ever in this band.
In 38
years. In 38 fucking years. How about that for a work ethic? How about that for just, you know what? And this band is a band that we've all here heard of, and I think most people have heard of, but probably don't have any or many of their records. It's a band that is highly overlooked when you're talking about the new wave of British heavy metal. This album was produced by Nigel Gray, who, it's funny you mentioned Regatta de Blanc.
Mm-hmm.
Or Zenyatta Mandata or Orlando's D'Amour, because Nigel Gray produced this album and those three Police albums.
Hey,
Serendipity, right?
Kicking off already.
And serendipitous from a recent episode as well, you're Godly and Cream. He also produced Godly and Cream.
Really?
Ungodly Man Cream, yes.
Yes, I'm surprised at that because those guys produced their own records, 10cc,
this was
prior.
Nigel Gray
is
a producer here. So, this band also – now, the bulk of their studio work, album releases, was done between 1980. They started in 1978 but really didn't get their touring and their first record out for 2 years. So they were even tooling around trying to get that record deal because that's how you did it back then, right?
Okay.
But most of their studio work was done between 80 and 92. Where they released 12 albums. Again, while all this touring is going on –
still pumped out a record every year.
Every 18 months for 12 years. That's fucking right. That's hard working, man, right?
Yeah.
So they come from London in sunny old England. And again, they are the longest running all female band.
Oh, girls' school.
Girls' school.
Of course.
Now they still toured, even though the bulk of their work stopped in 92. They put out an album in 92, and that was it. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't put out another album until, like, 2012, where they reconvened with the Enid, the bass player, came back.
Mm-hmm.
But they were still throughout the 90s and the early aughts where they literally had no albums, new albums. They were still touring and doing festivals and headlining, you know, clubs and pubs and, you know, anywhere they could get work. So, I mean, that's – to me, that's – that's a work ethic. There's that's hard work. And these chicks are the real deal.
You were so right about them being overlooked. Not too many people mention Girls' School.
Right.
And they need to be mentioned a lot more because they are fantastic. Great, great band.
Great band. And you know, that's – so I don't know what you would call them successful or not, but certainly they've made their mark, if you will. They – you know, if you're hip with the new wave of British heavy metal, of course, you know, you're hip with Priest and Maiden and, you know, even Def Leppard is thrown in there and Saxon. Hey, hey.
What, is that your Saxon impression?
No, that's their Sound Man. Hey.
Oh, oh.
Right?
Hey. Oh, yeah.
Goose brains.
Goose brains.
But, I mean, so to be able to do that is again, pure work ethic and the love of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, these chicks are not fucking posers. And they were not taken seriously enough, I think, by a lot of people when they started out. You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
There were a few people that really, really dug them. And not about, like, they wanted a piece of ass. Like sort of these girls are the heavy metal, borderline punk at times. Runaways.
Yeah.
But the Runaways were pretty and dolled up, and they were really aiming at your penis with their little – right? I mean, come on. Like, truly, that's what Kim Fowley had in mind.
Of course,
tart
yeah.
these chicks up. Hey, you know what? Come on, Joan Jett. Unzip that jumpsuit a little more before you go on stage. You know how – you know what we're doing here.
Right.
And so these girls were never indicative. They weren't that kind of band. They were one of these bands that really – the people that knew them and heard them went, you know, they're fucking good, you know?
Yeah.
They're really good. So they got hooked up with, where is it? Bronze Records. They were touring around and doing all that stuff, but Bronze Records owner went to one of their early rehearsals. And so he goes, it's a quote, his name is something Braun. I forget his last name or his first name, but I went to an early rehearsal and was surprised how well they played their instruments. How chauvinistic of me. Right? The first thing was,
yeah.
Oh, these chicks. And he was probably going, yeah, I'll go check them out.
Right.
That indicating he was not there with advanced knowledge of, I think I'm going to go be seeing a good band. He was just going to see some chicks play.
Yeah.
Right? He kind of gives that away, kind of shows his hand on that one. Says none of them were particularly good looking. Although from a distance, Kelly Johnson looked like that Charlie's Angels actress, Farrah Fawcett. But there was something about them. So that's the whole thing. The guy took a chance, acts like Uriah Heep and Motorhead took to him. You know, Uriah Heep was on Bronze Records.
Mm-hmm.
And Lemmy started to have a close relationship with the band for working purposes.
Yeah, so. I think we talked about that recently, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah. I think did you bring a track when we were talking about Motorhead?
Yes.
When I played Motorhead.
The record from 83 or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And that girls' school came up in that thing. But it's their relationship culminated in another collaboration of all things. Remember the collaboration with Wendy O. Williams?
Yes.
Right? And how disastrous that was for, you know, Motorhead at the time.
Of course, yeah.
All parties involved. Well, Lemmy did it with Girls School as well. And they put out a collaboration called on an EP in 1980 called St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which
yes.
I got to get that. I don't have that. Mm-hmm. Do you have that?
No. No, but we talked about that when I brought my Girls School record over. I got a different one. You have Screaming Blue Murder here.
Yeah, yeah. So I brought Screaming Blue Murder, and I'm going to play the title track, man. This is a really cool track. I love the fact that when they say murder, you can really hear their British accents. It's awesome.
Okay.
But this is written by Kelly Johnson, Kim McAuliffe, and Gil Weston. Now, Gil Weston is the bass player. She's the new bass player that replaced their original bass player, Enid. These chicks ain't good because they're chicks. These chicks are good because they're fucking good in my book.
No shit, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
and
the record I have is freaking phenomenal.
Yeah, it was Waffle.
Hit and Run, I think, is the name of it.
Yeah, I was gonna play the last track on side one called Hellraiser, Hellraiser.
And, a great horror flick.
Dude, there is some serious, serious double bass going on. Like Denise Dufert, the drummer, is throwing down – like serious fucking Motorhead, filthy animal filled double bass drum on that shit.
May I have a comment on the cover here? It's kind of cool. You know, they're kind of standing around a cage trying to come through it. Right here, this girl, second from the left.
That's Gil. That's a new bass player.
Gil.
I'm sorry. That's McAuliffe. That's Jenny McAuliffe.
So Jenny McAuliffe.
Or Kim McAuliffe. I'm sorry.
Whatever. Her arm is photoshopped in, like actually cut in. If you look real close, it's so funky looking because they put her arm through the cage. Check it out. Remember the end of Jaws 3 where the shark is coming through the giant glass window to eat Louis Gossett Jr.
Okay.
It's got a funky discoloration to it and a giant outline, like it's getting ready to, like, meteorologist Jaws. From, you know, it's got those weird lines around it.
That doesn't look Photoshopped.
Yes, it is. Look at it. Looks like Jaws 3.
It's, no yes, way.
Like, yes, it is.
Oh, yeah, her thumb's on the wrong side. She got two left hands.
All right, give me that. I'll put it on.
So that's going to be side one, track one, Scream Blue Murder. This is a good rocking number, man. But it also shows a little bit of depth, you know, that they're changing a little bit. They got a little bit more into production and songwriting, I think. So it wasn't as hard driving in a metal sense of the word as the other records that preceded it. So I think you're going to dig this. They kind of expand their horizons a little bit without losing their biting edge. And I think the production on it's pretty fucking good. So dig this. Screaming Blue Murder from Girls School. Does that rock?
That rocks as hard as anything else coming out in heavy metal in 1982.
Absolutely.
You know, those records are criminally overlooked.
Put it head to head with it, with any of the other, you know, bigger, quote unquote, bigger bands.
Yeah.
Especially Def Leppard. They crushed Def Leppard. I mean, I'm not.
Well, if they would have had Mutt Lange.
Yeah, right.
They had Mutt Lange producing and how meticulous he was in his
production. But it's interesting what happened. The sale of this album got halted, sadly, when they put it out. This is one of the original releases.
What did Mercury Records do to them?
They actually, the UK, it was Bronze, put out a bunch of them. It was supposed to have the lyrics on the inner sleeve,
okay.
Right? Which this does.
Yeah.
So all the UK, well, all the European releases put out by Bronze didn't have them. So Kerrang! Magazine went, well, here's what you can do. So people weren't buying them. They heard about this, and Kerrang! Put out a sort of a public open letter to Bronze Records. Hey, why don't you let people send in their old one and you send them another one back? And people were like, what? That was just weird. It kind of put an odd little sort of hiccup in the release of this album. Meanwhile, the band had taken off on tour and albums were getting recalled and exchanged. And
what a mess.
Labels going, what do we do? So this was the U.S. release, which had, you know, the original on it. But yeah, so it was a fiasco. So really, it's too bad because they were excited about getting, you know, the new bass player. They even mentioned, you know, hey, good luck to the old one on the back here. And, you know, thanks to everybody. And here's our new bass player. She's a fucking monster. And, you know.
But they should have done. What was that record you brought with lyrics from the previous album?
Remember?
I don't know what album that was, but it
had put them in there too.
Lyrics from it's the fourth album, but it had lyrics from the third and fourth album.
Pretty confident that you're going to be buying our next record. Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and put that.
Yeah.
Here's what we're going to do for you.
Awesome.
So that was Screaming Blue Murder from Girl School off the Screaming Blue Murder album. Came out in 1982. Get any Girl School album you can get your hands on, people. They're just good rock and roll, good metal. And some of the songs, again, they borderline on sort of metal punk, like Motorhead will do or Wasp will do.
Yep.
You know? All right, man. What you got, buddy?
Cool. All right. Moving on. This is certainly a great, great record. I'm so excited I found this. Actually, I think I was searching for some of our listener requests on episode 100, and I went to the record store, and this was sitting in the new arrivals section, and I was like, oh, hell yeah. Of course I'm going to buy that. I don't care how much it was. Mama Lion.
Oh, which store?
Revolver.
Oh my lord!
You're going to want to take a look at this album cover and the gatefold. So, Mama Lion. This is a record called Preserved Wildlife. This is on Family Productions, 1972. I'm going to play a song called Mr. Invitation, and of course, if anybody recalls the episode with Neil Merriweather, 50 Shades of A, he referred to this. This is Neil Merriweather's project from the early 70s, 1972. Check that out. Tell everybody what you're seeing. That's the gatefold.
Dude, she's fucking hot.
Yeah.
Holy fuck. All right. Well, if you're looking at the outside of the jacket itself, it's there's like a cutout window sort of.
Uh-huh.
Like, so you're actually looking through a window kind of into a panel below it, the cardboard below it, and says Mama Lion. You open it up, and oh, by the way, through the window is a beautiful, beautiful
70s looking chick.
Gorgeous. Blonde, huge eyes, Disney eyes, lips that could, you know.
Disney eyes?
Yeah.
She's got Disney eyes. Yeah, like a doll's
eyes. She's got a mustache like Walt Disney. and you open it up, and below where the windowsill is that you can't see from the public view when you open it up, she is bare-breasted and,
yes, she
and
is.
Fine, fine mammary it is. My God.
Ample.
She I am really horny right now.
Are you going to take that to the masturbatorium?
Yes. Prepare the masturbatorium. Prepare my oils.
Bring my lotions and oils.
But she is holding what looks like a baby lion
cub. It is a baby lion cub.
And it's suckling her teeth.
Yes, it is.
That's all I can say about that. God, she is fucking hot. I'm getting just disturbedly excited by looking at that.
I figured you'd like that.
Yeah, this is that illegal?
It could be.
She's having like that.
What a cool record this is. Let me tell you something. This record is fantastic. And she's got a hell of a voice, man.
I don't care. I'm buying that record.
So remember Neil Merriweather talking about the infamous Artie Rip?
Yes.
This is Neil's first encounter with Mr. Artie Rip. So it sort of sets up, if we talk about this record and its history, it leads us into Artie Rip taking hold of Neil's career for a while.
Oh, jeez.
Now, Neil's girlfriend at the time is that chick, Lynn Carey, who's the singer.
Way to go, Neil.
Neil,
dude,
I'm impressed. And she had a deal with RCA with a group called CK Strong. And there's
I said all that stuff with the utmost respect, by the way.
Oh, it ended badly.
With the uttermost respect.
Spoiler alert. But there's a couple A&R people that were new to RCA that were working with Lynn. And they were also familiar with Neil Merriweather from his Jam album, the Merriweather album you have from 70 or 69.
Mm-hmm. Word of mouth.
I believe we played that on the on the show. And so they want to work with Neil. And so Neil invites Lynn into the new project for RCA, and they call the project Ivor Avenue Reunion because it was a reunion of sorts with the Merriweather group and basically bringing Lynn Carey into it. And Ivor is the street that the RCA studios was on. It's Ivor and Sunset.
So I haven't been listening.
No, you're just – you are lost in that –
fucking
picture.
Remarkable.
So it was supposed to just be, remember Neil was always talking about this was a one-off, like Heavy Cruiser was a one-off,
right.
and this Ivor Avenue Reunion was a one-off. Out of that one album, RCA ends up signing Neil and Lynn as a duo, so they called it Merriweather and Carey. And they did an album called Vacuum Cleaner in 1971 that I want to get a hold of because I really dig Lynn's voice. But and of course it's Neil and it's the guitar player is that Coffee guy and
wasn't that the drummer I think.
Was he the drummer? He was the drummer. I'm sorry. Yeah. But the two guys that were championing them at RCA were fired and replaced by people who were not on board with Merriweather and Casey. And Neil and Lynn went as far as to travel to New York City and meet the new people at RCA, but they left going, oh, it's over. This album's doomed to fail. So it's on Discogs. I think when I pick it up, it's probably like $12 or $15 on Discogs.
And it's record buying season here in Phoenix.
It is.
Almost.
It's on now. I think it's officially on October.
Yeah, it's been a couple of chilly days. I wouldn't mind a record sitting out there for a couple hours. It should survive. Huh?
So they land back in L.A. after talking to the suits over at RCA, thinking, well, this is over. Enter Artie Rip.
Artie Rip. The infamous
Artie
Rip ripoff.
Yes. Who provided Neil with an influx of cash to start over. And this is what Neil says. Quote, he set us up with salaries and allowed us to get all the equipment we needed. And we even had a personal rehearsal room attached to the record plant studios in L.A. Within a few weeks after signing with Rip, our keyboard player put his hand and arm through a shower door and couldn't use it, so I found James Newton Howard, who plays on this record right here.
Monster.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Monster
player, James Newton Howard, who does a lot of scoring now. He did some production work and played with Elton John and stuff, but, mm-hmm. I mean, he's best known now for doing big feature film scores and stuff. So he's on this record, and the first cover, by the way, was my idea. This is all Neil's idea, this whole cover.
All right.
But it was too good of an idea for Rip to let me have the credit.
Liz took the album cover from me, by the way.
Good. It was too good of an idea for Rip to let me have the credit. The lion's name on the gatefold there, that's suckling, the lion's name is Kim, and he was the son of Mayor the Lion from the Tarzan TV series.
No kidding.
Yeah. The second album cover was to be a big hunk of meat and was to be a double album. I produced the second Mama Lion album and then pretty much gave up on the band when Lynn and her coke-inflamed ego started to refer to herself as Mama Lion. After I left, Rip got his fingers into the project and ruined some of it, but the second album did get released, and wouldn't you know it, there's no band on the cover, just her.
Yeah, go figure.
So, one of the other stories with Artie Rip and how.
So, did you talk to Neil, or did you do investigation on that?
No, I did some investigation. Yeah. There was an interview that he's recently conducted. So,
right on.
Yeah, I mean, this was a great find. I was really excited to find it. They wanted $20 for it, and
worth it.
Luckily, I had. Revolver gives you those little hole punch cards, you know, and once you get to 10, you get half off. So I got it for $10. I was pretty pleased with that. It was a good use of my.
Oh, that's phenomenal then.
A good use of my little card there. Of course, this is all going around the same time that Neil's doing Heavy Cruiser. So he does those two Heavy Cruiser records, and this is without Lynn Casey. And I believe in passing on our show, Neil was saying something like, when I got tired of hearing Lynn scream all the time, I was doing Heavy Cruiser. And that's kind of Lynn's voice is very Janis Joplin.
You see that
Maggie Bell.
I'm going to read stuff for fuck's sake.
don't Don't give it to him.
Oh, look, all the writing's on the inside. Oh, no, yes. No, no, it's not.
And of course, after that, Neil went to the great Space Rangers after that. And the rest is history here at Shabby Road. So I'm going to play a song called Mr. Invitation. This song is a heavy, riffy rock, great groove kind of thing. And Lynn is singing over top of it, just wailing over top of it, saying, like, this guy is hitting on her, and all she wants, or all he wants, is to get with her.
Well, dude, look.
Can't sizzle blame him.
Roar.
But there's times in her vocal where she is screaming, and she's almost breathlessly screaming. It's real. I mean, she is giving it 110% on
That's
this vocal.
Cool.
It's
Good
really cool. And this album, she does some covers. She does a great version of Can't Find My Way Home, Ain't No Sunshine.
Oh, wow.
And
cool.
A lot of stuff written by Neil and her. So this song actually is one of the Meriwether and Carrie co-writes here.
Yeah.
They wrote it. So let's go ahead and drop the needle on it. Side two, track one, Mr. Invitation. This is Mama Lion.
Oh,
from the,
it sure is.
From the first album, Preserve Wildlife.
Thank you.
Yeah, from 1972. That is Mr. Invitation by the group Mama Lion. That's Neil Merriweather's group. He's playing bass on that. Vocals, Lynn Carey. Drums is Coffee Hall. And then guitar is Rick Gaxiola. And the keyboard is the great James Newton Howard.
Wow.
Way younger.
Yeah, man.
Way younger back in the day, 1972.
That band is just killing it, every last one of them.
And it was produced and directed by Artie Ripp.
Well, of course it was. He was out doing cocaine and hookers while the band was in there sweating it out.
That's right.
And he produced it.
Yep.
Because I'm Artie Ripp.
Yep. Yeah. Cool. Wow. All right.
Very, very good. I think we're off to a pretty good start here.
Girl power here at the top.
Yeah, all the
way,
right? Well, I brought something I think you might dig.
Mm-hmm.
This fantastic band is from Dublin, Ireland.
Love them already.
Yep. Right?
Hey, that's my neck of the woods.
This band has been around since They've been around since 99. Haven't made a dent anywhere outside of Ireland. Had very little success even getting records exported, even into England.
Really?
It just they're huge in Ireland, but Australia kind of took a little shine into them, but not much. But they're pretty much ignored by everyone except for Ireland.
Well,
right?
Okay.
And you know this band. The name of this band is Pugwash.
Pugwash?
Yes.
Oh, right.
I brought their new record.
There it is.
Yes.
I was thinking about picking this up. How is it?
It's a good record. It's a good, you know, I mean— He's mellowed a little bit. He never was exactly doing metal. I would call this some of it, I'd say some of it soft rock or even just, I don't know, AOR, some of it. But
interesting.
It's great, though. I mean, you know, he's always had that Beatley edge, that Jeff Lynne edge, and of course the influence, and of course Andy
Partridge.
Why fucking dude? Why can't I think of that? It's like you don't write down that shit because you know that shit. You just go, oh, and then I'm fucking drawing a total blank. Mm-hmm. But so yeah, I mean, he was a big fan of XTC. He really liked that band a lot. He was a big fan of ELO.
Ooh,
and what's really cool is that Andy Partridge kind of took a shining to his first four albums. And let me clarify. When I say his. This guy, the main guy in the band is Thomas Walsh, and he goes by the name of Pugwash. Personally, that was a nickname he got when he was young, named after a pirate, a cartoon strip.
Oh, okay.
From the '50s.
I was gonna say it sounds derogatory.
It's Captain Pugwash, so a pirate, and he's kind of chubby. He's got so I guess he got called Pugwash when he was younger. So anyway, he kind of took that name on. As himself as a solo artist before putting the band together and calling it Pugwash.
Okay.
Okay. It's just to clarify. So if I say Pugwash, I'm generally speaking about the band.
And not the man.
And not the guy. It'll be Thomas Walsh. So just to clarify that. So anyway, he was a huge fan of Andy Partridge, for fuck's sake. But again, couldn't get arrested outside of Ireland. But Andy Partridge got wind of his first four records. And one of which, Ryan, was Jollity.
Now that's a great record.
That's an amazing. That's a start here.
That's the only one I'm really familiar with.
Well, you heard Earworm, right?
Oh yeah. Okay. Earworm was the follow up to that Jollity. Or
right.
Was it
well, okay. Here's the deal with Earworm was actually a re-release of their first two albums. So if you have Earworm, you have their first two albums.
Ah, okay.
Almond Tea. And Almanac came out in 99 and then the other one 2002. And then Jollity came out after that.
Okay.
If you have – and I've got them on CD.
Mm-hmm, me
but
too.
I don't have either of them on vinyl. So I found this in the record store. And like you, I had points on my Zia card.
Nice.
So
look at us bargain shoppers.
I got this Pugwash record for $7 brand new sealed.
Yeah.
So I was pretty excited about that. It's – you know, it's Thomas Walsh. He plays and writes really intelligent – introspective music. It's not going to clobber you over the head, but the voicings,
mm-hmm.
the arrangements are stellar. And again, with an Andy Partridge influence, you know, and a Jeff Lynne influence, who he highly idolized them.
Yeah.
And really,
the earlier stuff is a little more sunshine pop.
I think more Beatley,
More Beatley. Yeah. He's heavy on the ballads and the melancholy Being from Ireland, I imagine.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of melancholy in a lot of it, but it's so well written. It's just gorgeous, you know, how he's putting it together.
This one sits a little a ballady, too, and I don't mean that certainly in a derogatory way. I mean, the cuts on this record, every one of them is just really, really, really good. It's just a matter of which one, you know, to pick. But none of them are, you know, this is not, you know, getting ready for pre-fight warm-up music. This is sitting around.
If you were a wrestler, you wouldn't come out to track one side one.
This is not your fighting tune. This is not your, I'm going to, you know, make mincemeat out of you. Although the name of the song is Kicking and Screaming.
Oh.
But it's really interesting, though, lyrically, he talks about, you know, kicking and screaming and on your knees. But really what he talks about is he's, according to Walsh, he says, I'm physically, quote, physically trying to push and pull all the negative thoughts out of our heads that we tend to store up more as we get older. So it really turns into a very introspective thing. And I think musically you can tell, lyrically it's always been that way, but he does get a little softer. But of all cool things, now he was also a Kinks fan. Ray Davies shows up on this album.
Cool.
Andrew Partridge shows up on this album, and Jeff Lynne shows up on this album.
What does Jeff Lynne does? Because on the hype sticker, it says a shout from Jeff Lynne.
Well, that's what he does at about,
oh, come on.
At about 2 minutes, 40 in.
Oh, God.
They've done the intro, the verse, the song. They've gone through the cycle of the song, and then they hit the chorus, and then they, you know how they sort of refrain the chorus line a couple of few times, and uh-huh. and it's resolving itself, and then right into the final guitar line going into the outro of the song. There's this inaudible.
And that's
and it's Jeff Lynne at about
hardly worthy of a hype sticker.
Well, and hardly worthy of really leaving it in the mix, I'm thinking. I mean, long before the hype sticker, I'm thinking it's not like nobody heard it until the album came out. It's like, oh, wow, I didn't hear that during the mix down. Or no, that didn't show up in the mastering. But it's really cool. So, yeah, Andy Partridge, by the way, owns the record label. He liked him so much that he it's his record label, Omnivore.
Good for him, man. So keeping Pugwash alive. Because I was wondering whatever happened to them. Jollity came out a decade ago, right?
And the fact that on the strength of his name and his friendship with these guys, you know, Ray Davies and Jeff Lynne, you know, through a personal relationship. Now, he's gotten involved with writing with Walsh now. They like it. It's like not only it's sort of the sensei, you know, the guy that he idolized is kind of idolizing him. They're like, dude, this is so awesome.
Yeah.
So it's a really cool thing where dude meets his hero and now he's working with him and writing songs with him. And, you know, it's a fucking cool scenario.
It's a good story then.
Yeah, man. And of course, now then Jeff Lynne, his other hero. So he's getting the double hero whammy, right?
Nice.
And then Ray Davies, he's like, dude, like, what? Pinch me, motherfucker. So he's just loving this.
Great.
This whole thing. So it's a.
Why is he so sad?
It rains a lot. It was a bad year for potatoes. I don't know.
Song called You Could Always Cry.
Yeah. Well, this album is called Play This Immediately As If Among Friends. It sounds like a New York Dolls album title, a new New York Dolls album title.
Yeah.
This one's called Kicking and Screaming. Ryan, it's going to be side one, track one.
Beautiful.
Really cool changes in here, man. You're going to love the chord changes. You and Ricky are going to just fucking melt when you hear some of
these. Ooh, red vinyl.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to tell you, red vinyl.
Oh, my God. $7, you asshole.
Yeah.
I hate you so much.
Great, great record. So you're going to want the side with the printing on it.
Okay.
It's side one. That would be this side, actually. Yeah, so Kicking and Screaming.
Out.
right?
Yeah, I love those guys.
Pugwash.
Pugwash, yeah.
Man, what you can do with the chords to Hey You Get Off of My Cloud. Right? Fucking A. I'm going to just call it Kicking and Screaming and make it really cool all over again. That's great.
Indeed, they did. I love the production on that record, too.
It's great. That was Tosh Flood's one of the guys in the band, and Thomas Walsh was the other guy. Tosh Flood and Thomas Walsh. Thomas Walsh, of course, Pugwash and the main guy in the band.
But, okay, yeah.
But, you know, the band's been consistent, like I said, since I've got Earworm, which is their first two albums combined. I got that, mm-hmm. sadly, only on CD.
Yeah.
And I've got Jollity also, which is their third. So this is their fourth. Jollity's their fourth. And all three of those are strong. And stylistically, this is as good as any other. Now, we were just talking, they put out one 4 years ago. So kind of makes me want to go get that one, too. I'm willing to bet, you know, they've been on Partridge's label. He gave them a 5-album deal.
Really?
So this is – I think this is their third – I think their third.
So they've been making records
label.
With him for a while. Okay.
So, you know, it's good shit. Pugwash from the UK, from Ireland. Yeah, Kicking and Screaming, September 2015. Good stuff. Get it.
All right. Very nice, AD. Good call.
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm doing all my records in chronological order here. I just went 72. Now it's time to go to 1973 on Manticore Records.
Oh, it's got
to
be Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
Not quite. If you recall, this band I played on season one of the Shabby Road Record Show, and it was met with a lot of fun times talking about Snuffy Walden.
Oh!
And that band's name was Stray Dog.
Right.
So I got their second record, and the name of the record is While You're Down There.
That's a good one. I got that one.
Do you have this one?
Yes, I do. That's a great
this is a
record.
Different. This is a different vibe than the first one. The first record is kind of a power trio, bluesy power trio, with Snuffy really taking the reins, Snuffy Walden.
Yeah.
And so this second album finds them augmenting the band with two other dudes. And one of the guys is a singer, songwriter, and guitar player that they've hired on. And he's really in charge of most of the record here. And Snuffy, who was the leader of the group on the last record, now takes a back seat. And he only contributes two songs, one of which is a new version of a song from the first album. And
right?
then he sings another one, but that's not one that he wrote. Snuffy would leave this band during the tour of the album, and well, you know what happened to Snuffy after that. He went on to great success.
Oh my God.
I believe he was in charge of the music of the Wonder Years.
All kinds of shit.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Tons of movie and film.
Big hit television.
Felicity
and stuff.
Felicity was there. And recently his name just came up. I was watching Smokey and the Bandit 2. Musical supervision by
really?
Snuffy. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Snuffy Walden.
Fuck.
Yeah. So he's not hurting for cash. He's done a ton of movie and film scoring and stuff over the years. So Wonder Years, that's some big cha-ching. That's
yes,
right,
it
Hal.
It is. Yeah, racking up the coin.
Exactly. So we know about Snuffy, but, you know, it wasn't like the label just stuck Snuffy with some L.A. guys. The two new members are people that he knew from his hometown of Houston, or at least one of them is. The new singer and songwriter guy's name is Tim Dulane, and he has a rich history in the music business before and after his tenure with Stray Dog. His friendship with Snuffy dates back to the 1960s, and Tim spent time in New York. So Snuffy and him were friends, and then they sort of drifted apart as Snuffy goes out to wherever he stayed in Texas and formed Stray Dog and got the deal and got things going. When Tim spent time in New York to avoid the draft, so he goes up to New York City. And
how do you do that? So New York's still in bounds, isn't
well,
it?
Apparently, he spent time in New York to avoid the draft. Then he moved back to Houston to avoid the draft, and then moved to L.A. to avoid the draft.
Oh, they found him. He moved. They
He's
found
like,
him.
I'm
he
out
moved.
Of here.
I get it. Okay. He didn't want to go to Canada, though.
Right? Yeah.
He didn't want that kind
he
of commitment. He never got back. That's
yeah.
why. Yeah.
It's kind of like a whack-a-mole game.
Oh fuck. Yeah.
So as a kid in Houston, Tim used to hang out at this local music store, H&H. And there happened to be a whorehouse upstairs at this music store.
Excellent.
Yeah. Did your music store have a whorehouse? Mine didn't.
No.
Not that I knew
I
of.
I just brought mine with me.
Well, he meets this guy who was in a popular local band, and the guitarist had just quit. So Tim gets this gig, and they have a regional hit, and they move to the Village in New York, and that's how he gets to New York, where two of the guys become sidemen for a band called Jimmy James and the Blue Flames. Are you familiar with who that is?
Jimmy James, is that James Brown?
Nope. Jimmy James and the Blue Flames is Jimi Hendrix's first band
when he arrives in the village
in New York. And so Tim's apartment is right next door to Jimmy's. And so they hung out all the time. And he's talking about his two buddies that he moved to New York with. They wind up as the Blue Flames for a period of time until one of them reaches over and turns Jimmy's amp down or something and pisses Jimmy off. And he fires him.
Don't you touch my amp.
Yeah. So it's back to Houston for Tim after that. And he's discovered by a Hollywood agent who booked him on a tour all over the U.S. And then he relocates to Hollywood. And he gets involved in the scene there. He's got a band together. He's doing demos. He's partying at the Rainbow. He's writing songs. He's partying at the Hyatt House.
Oh.
You know how it goes. And one night at the Hyatt, old Snuffy comes walking in. Stray Dog was touring on their first record. And so they get to drinking and hanging out and partying. And Tim convinces him to move to Hollywood. Like, you should move here to Hollywood. I got some connections and stuff. And so Snuffy invites him to join Stray Dog, and they start working on new songs for the second record. Now, I don't know if this is at the behest of the record label saying the Power Trio thing is dead, you guys. It's 1973. Let's do some more pop.
That, yeah.
Could be.
That could make sense. I could see that.
Yeah. And so he says, quote, Manticore Records set us up in a very large and very dark soundstage on the Sunset Strip called Entertainment Services. We rehearsed there for the next Stray Dog record. It was an outrageous Hollywood event every night.
Holy crap.
So they released the album that you have in your hands there and did a tour, but then Snuffy walked out of the band after a gig in Detroit. And so they kind of hung on for a bit after that, but it was pretty much the end of Stray Dog without old Snuffy behind. And of course, he goes on to do his thing. Tim goes back to L.A., and he bounces around to different bands. He's mixed up with Lita Ford at one point. He stays in L.A.
Oh, Lita.
Yeah, somehow. Yes.
I'll get her out.
Yeah.
Oh, good girl.
So I think at some point in the 80s, he opened up a pet store. It was like a rock and roll pet shop.
Snakes and spiders, that kind of thing.
Maybe, I don't know. But in his little bio, he's
like, little kittens and puppies are not very rock
and roll. I opened up a really cool pet store. I went bankrupt. Which is great. So at first I wanted to dismiss him as like, fuck, this is Snuffy's band. Who's this jackass coming on board? But apparently it's nice to know that they were bros back in the day, and they and Snuffy had invited him, at least according to Tim. And
where did the other guy come in from?
Well, I don't know if Tim met him in California or if he's another Houston dude.
Yeah, because there's that other dude now.
The keyboard player,
Luis Cabeza.
Yeah. So I don't know if he comes from Texas as well. He might. But, so the other two cats from Stray Dog are still there from the first time.
Cats from Stray Dog.
Yeah, thank you. Wow.
The pack is getting bigger, though. It's a lot of Stray Dogs.
It is, yeah. Right? This is a pretty decent record. I kind of prefer the first one because it's rawness and it's really kind of interesting.
I would agree with you on
that. The second record, though, is growing on me because you got to take it for what it is. It's more of, they kind of go for a poppier, song-oriented kind of deal, you know, but they still retain a lot of, like, Snuffy's guitar solos on this record are fantastic, man. He's really playing his balls off.
Yeah, you know, you have a good point, though. There were a lot of power trios breaking up, you know, around then. I mean, Cream had done its thing, you know, Derek and the Dominoes. I mean, this is a couple years earlier, but, you know, it took a few bands longer, a little bit longer. James Gang, other bands. This thing, the bluesy electric rock.
You know what happened is Cream had broken up. Bowie was moving in.
Times were changing, man.
Yeah, it was a different era.
Yeah.
Right. So we're going to hear a song called Very Well. I think it's Very Well then. It's indicative of the record. It's kind of funky. It's got all kinds of hooks and it's sung by Tim. So you kind of get a feel for the new direction of Stray Dog if you're at all familiar with the first record, which most people probably are not. But it's definitely worth picking up both of these records, I think, because they're very interesting artifacts of the time, to, you know, of 1972 and 1973, and it's such a short-lived thing.
Yeah.
But very cool. So let's drop the needle on this. This is Side 2, Track 2, AD. The name of the album is While You're Down There, from Stray Dog, 1973, Manticore Records.
I sing a song for you, my love.
Cool. There's some Stray Dog playing very well.
Right? And okay, I like it. I mean, listen, I dig what they're doing on this album. I respect where they're trying to go.
Yeah.
You know how I am, though? It's like, do you call it Stray Dog? Obviously, contractual obligation.
Sure.
Probably needed to put out another record.
Second album.
It's such a change, you know, and you go, it's the same band. It's a little, you know, I
think it's way different than the first album.
Well, it is. I guess that's what I'm saying. I respect what they're trying to do, but it's a very drastic change for, I mean, if, you know, Boston came out with a new album that sounded like Motorhead. You know, the Boston fans would go like, what the fuck, right?
Certainly, yes. And that song in particular certainly puts out what is the problems with this record? That song summed it all up. There were moments in that song, like we were just talking about how the keyboard, the piano is out of place in that song, and it's not locked in either. The guy's way too busy
trying to do like a funky song, Dr. John thing, and just not pulling it off.
He's not locked in at all. Yeah. And so there's a miss, and just little funky things like that peppered throughout the entire record. It does. I think overall the songs are good, and I do enjoy the record, but it's like, it's frustrating because it's not, you know,
it's not your daddy's Stray Dog. Right?
1 year later.
Right. Not like the old days.
But definitely, yeah, check out the first one. And, you know, if you find the other one for a couple bucks, pick it up, because there's definitely some highlights in it. A couple of the ballads are really nice on it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's, again, it's but when you expect something, I think for the buyer, not knowing what it is, mm-hmm. you just go, wait a minute, there's five. Okay. And we were talking about, while it was playing, how great that song probably would have been.
Yeah.
If pulled off. You know, buy a three-piece or like, let's throw in that second guitar. All right.
Yeah.
But, you know, that keyboard was like, didn't need to be there. They could have chunked
weird
it up
texture.
A little bit.
Yeah, and weird texture for that song.
And you mentioned, Snuffy singing that. It's like, okay, now we're getting somewhere.
Right, yeah. Right? Yeah, so, couple missteps, but
yeah.
Overall, pretty solid
pretty
still.
Pretty good album. Good record.
All right, Edie, what you got?
I got Argent.
You got Argent, William.
I do have Argent.
Are you going to play God Gave Rock and Roll to You?
No, I'm not. But this is the same album that it's on.
Oh, really?
The In Deep album. The one that looks like, or I should say, the one that the Nirvana album cover was sort of based on.
Wow, that is almost a baby, shot right? for shot there.
I have the In Deep album.
Uh-huh.
This, what do you even say about this album? Okay, Golden Earring Syndrome, first of all.
Oh, right.
Argent, Hold Your Head Up. Right?
Hold Your Head Up.
Now, the band on this record, I think for the first time they played as a band. Now this is, I think, their fourth album. And all their original members have always been with them. It was Rod Argent on keyboards, his cousin, Jim Radford, on drums, Russ Ballard on guitar and lead vocals, and then Bob Henrit, is playing the bass in this band. So you've got the same four guys, Rod Argent and like I said, Jim Radford's his cousin. So and Rod Argent had just left the Zombies.
Yeah, I was trying to remember the 60s band he was in. It was the Zombies, yeah?
Yeah, so, okay. I mean, it's a time of the season.
It's so weird because on the way here, I heard the other Zombies song.
Oh, She's Not There.
She's Not There. And I thought, is this the band that Ron Argent's from?
Rod
Argent's from?
Yeah.
That's so weird that now you're bringing it and we're talking about it.
Well, it's funny because now the producer of this, the producers on this album are Rod Argent and Chris White. Now, Chris White is the ex-bass player from the Zombies. And Rod Argent and Chris White wrote most of the material from the Zombies. So basically, White and Argent quit, sort of broke up the Zombies, but they were writing all the material. Rod Argent started the band. Chris White said, good luck with that. How about I just produce you?
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Smartest guy in the room.
No kidding. Free money.
Right. So now you got this. You still have the collaboration of Rod Argent and Chris White working together, as Chris White as producer and helping to arrange and all that stuff. So like on the first three Argent albums, it was all Argent. And we know with the assist from White.
Okay.
On this album, this is the first album, and it's the same four guys.
But now Chris White is collaborating in the songwriting.
Chris White had already sort of collaborated with Argent anyway. So if you look at side one, song one is a Russ Ballard song. Song two, and song three are all Russ Ballard. And then the fourth cut is Argent and White. Mm-hmm. So you go over to side two, then you got Argent and White, Argent and White, Argent and White. And then the last cut is a Ballard song.
All right. Good songwriters all the way around, right?
Right. So now you got this team of really good songwriters. It took – I wonder what took so long, though. You know, Russ Ballard being the lead vocalist, a lot of people think that, you know, Rod Argent is the singer for Argent. It's not. It's Russ Ballard.
I thought he was.
Everybody thought he was.
Oh, wow.
Right. No, it's Russ Ballard.
I love this podcast. I learn new stuff all the time.
So, but you know, and so that's it, but it makes you wonder because Russ Ballard's a great songwriter. And yeah. Like, but the name of the band, I guess, is Argent.
Well, so, yeah.
But I think it's really cool. This, the album, the other albums I think are more straight. Well, I know for sure they're more straight ahead. This is a little bit, they're getting a little bit looser. They're really testing their vocals, a lot more harmonies as evidenced in God Gave Rock and Roll to You. Mm. Some of the operatic passes and
yeah,
stuff
a little,
and
our little funky
little
yeah.
You know, vocal arpeggio things that are going on and all that. But this album, they put their toe in a little prog, but there's pop mixed in. There's so many facets to the sound and the styles and the textures on this record, but it's not, I don't want to, it's not sporadic and it's not disjointed. It's not jagged. It's really cohesive.
Huh. Okay.
So they go through, they'll be just rocking shit. Boom, boom, stop. And then this little thing where the keyboard will do a weird thing or the vocals will come in and the song I'm going to play, it's the first track and it's a little bit of a long one, but it's funny because you get into it and you're really digging a thing. They make a change and then you literally are so into the next part that you've totally forgotten about the part you just heard, which is really good. And then they turn on a dime again and you're so into this new part. And then all of a sudden they take you back to the very first part of the song. And you're going, oh, fuck, yes.
Okay.
And it's really,
yeah,
it's convincing.
Kind of prog.
I think but it's convincing because the parts themselves, I wouldn't say are proggy. They got the great riffs, kind of bluesy, heavy rock.
Interesting.
Very, very melodic, lyrically, vocally. And I mean, it's a happy tune. Be glad. You know, it just takes you
the
through.
The name of it is Be Glad.
Be Glad. And it's I don't know, it's a really cool thing. Now, the thing about Russ Ballard now, he has got a huge connection to Kiss.
Yeah, he did not only God Gave Rock and Roll to You, but he did another. Did he write New York Groove?
He wrote Back in New York Groove. He also wrote Peter Criss's Let Me Rock You and Some Kind of Hurricane from the Let Me Rock You album.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he did. And he also wrote Ace also covered Into the Night from his Fairies Comet.
Yeah, that's the other one.
Yeah. But dude, he also wrote – I mean So this is the thing, still the mystery. The first three Argent albums are all – there's no Russ Ballard songs, right? But meanwhile, he's writing Since You've Been Gone by Rainbow, or after that actually, but still.
Wow, okay.
I Surrender by Rainbow. He wrote that.
Really?
He wrote Liar by Three Dog Night, which appears
– oh, that's an
right?
old one.
Yeah, right? And then he wrote On the Rebound from Uriah Heep's Abominog record.
Hey.
So you got that one.
I do.
So check that out. It's probably a goddamn good song. This Russ Ballard writes
On
good
the Rebound,
shit, dude.
It's okay.
Oh. But anyway.
Yes, and.
But I just think it's a really cool record because for the first time, the band really becomes a band and they kind of step outside the little box. I mean, and the only box we know that Argent has is Hold Your Head Up. And it's all keyboardy and chunk, chicka chunk. And there's no... It's not dangerous. There's no danger. There's no real big turns and twists.
And that's Russ Ballard sings Hold Your Head Up?
Yeah, he's the lead singer.
I didn't even know that.
Right? Yeah.
Did you know that, Liz?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, Russ Ballard's always been singing.
Now.
Great
it's just
voice.
Two of us.
And this guy's, he's kind of one of these, I don't know. One of these guys, like a McCartney, who's got three or four different distinct voices.
Mm-hmm.
Like a Robin Zander. You know, he's got
his hard rock voice,
yeah,
his ballad voice.
Yeah, and so it's really cool. This guy really displays great, great vocals on this. A lot of really cool shit. So if you're an Argent fan, if you like Hold Your Head Up, get this album. It's a little bit different than that. song.
Well, you got me very curious about this record now.
It's a great record. You should check it out. You can buy it for a song, man.
I think, yeah, dollar bin for that, right?
Yeah, I think I paid $2.99 for this because it's in pretty good shape. But it's really worth putting in your collection and really worth listening to at least a few times. I can't take it off turntable. I haven't put it back on the shelf. I really like this record.
Awesome.
It's got all my cool proggy, weird, goofy shit in
it. All right,
and
I'm
just
in.
Giggle with delight. As a matter of fact, it's funny. They do one song, It's Only Money. They do it twice. They do God Gave Rock and Roll to You, side one, track one.
Yeah.
And then they do It's Only Money, part one. And then they do a different version of the same fucking song right after it. Same song. Different version. And they're both fucking totally badass. You forget you're listening to the same song. I'm telling you, it's really cool. So
it's
anyway.
Not the song that Robin Trower covered, is it?
I don't know.
Maybe.
Give me that thing.
I think Robin Trower wouldn't be doing a Russ Ballard song, but it's going to be side two, track one, Ryan. Be Glad. This is epic. Oh, speaking of epic, it's on Epic. Came out in March 1973. Argent from the In Deep album. Be Glad. Dude, hold on to your seats, kids. Hold on to your heroin, people. This is a rough ride.
No kind of fool you were, froze our freedom.
Well, I like it.
What the hell?
Right?
What the hell was that all about?
You know, that's a cool thing. They just really went there on this album. But the thing is, dude, I mean, it's way too prog to be pop. It's you know, some of the other songs are too pop to be called prog. And, I mean, all of it rocks, but it's, you know what I mean? So, I mean, nobody played their records because they go, what are we going to do? Like, what station do you play it on?
Yeah,
like,
I don't know what this is.
What is this? You know? I mean, somebody put something on your plate you'd never seen. The first thing you know, at least, is like, what is this?
That was really out there. It's almost...
But all of it's really good. It's really clever. And there's a mood. They literally take you into a place where you forget you were listening to that other song, and it's pleasant, it's fun. Listen, they're not trying to, like, you know, plow you down with Marshalls on this record, and I think that's what's fun about it. I like this record. I'm telling you, but some of the songs, I mean, because of the stylistic differences and their, I think their willingness willingness, I guess, to go outside the box on this album, uh-huh, from what you perceive, you know, Hold Your Head Up and all this stuff, which is definitely not as out there as, sure, this. The first three albums are definitely trimmed a little bit tidier, although I think the album version of Hold Your Head Up is like 9 days long. I think that had to be edited for radio. But I mean, some of their songs, and stylistically and as far as quality goes, you're going to hear one song has shades of Billy Preston, and I would put him up against any Billy Preston song. Dr. John, same story. There's some Paul Simon hints here and there. There's some Elton John hints, all of which I'd put take any one of their tracks on this album and put head-to-head against any of those artists that I just named.
Wow.
It's a great album. It might not be everyone's cup of tea, but I think it's a great, great album.
Well, you got me convinced, like, if I find it for a couple bucks, I'm willing to take a chance on it, because I love records that do that really challenge you, you know, to kind of go, hey, we're going this way now, and you got to kind of follow them along. And
you're right, $3, $4 at the most, $3.99, you're going to find them, and they're everywhere.
Yeah.
Just look for the Argent album that looks like Nirvana's Nevermind album.
Good. Yeah, exactly.
And that's except for without the baby and the fish hook, I think.
Right. Right. And the money.
Right. Yeah, and the money. So that was Argent from the In Deep album. Be glad.
Be glad.
Be glad, everybody. I'm glad.
Remember. Did you like it, Ricky?
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Well, what was it, pummeling you with Marshalls?
Excellent.
It's
Come
time
on.
To pummel you with Marshalls.
I love that about you, Ryan.
This is, boy, is this record
Marshall-y?
Looked upon as a disaster. On many fronts. But I think the record's very fascinating. It's one of those records where it's the first record of the band's catalog, and they hadn't found their sound yet.
Okay.
But there are certainly glimpses of what they would become. And I look at this record as being fascinating in the sense that what if this band never became the Leviathan that they became later and the pioneers of heavy metal that they would become? What would it be like if this record was
Metallica?
Just... Metallica? No. We're going back earlier. What would happen if this band never did that? Would this record be like, if there's only this record and the one after it, these guys would be like almost like Jane, right? That band from Germany.
Yeah, sure.
Like this really cool, like, whoa, I found this, and it's a $70 record because you can't find it. It would be like heralded as great. I'm speaking of Rock-a-Rolla by Judas Priest.
Oh, very cool. Yes.
So this record is fairly maligned, you know, by not only the band, but the fans and the critics and everything else. And it didn't
again,
do much.
It ain't your daddy's Priest.
No, it's a different...
It's not the Priest that you know.
There's a lot of things that went wrong on this record, and I'll get to some of the things at the band site as being sort of damaging to the record. But... what's, like, your opinion on the record? Is it's a solid rock and roll kind of early metal record?
It is.
Right?
I mean, it's indicative of a change. You know, it's the start of their whole thing. You know,
right?
I mean, the beginning of that.
Yeah.
So
I'm just fascinated to think about what this record, like, the opinion of this record would be had Judas Priest not become the Screaming for Vengeance Judas
Alfred
Priest.
Hadn't really found his voice yet either as a singer. He really wasn't in that. Oh, you want to call it in character, if you will,
right,
for lack
right.
of a better, like when Alice Cooper sings,
right?
He's in character, and he's got
there's
you
a
know
couple
that.
Of goofy things that Halford does on this record in terms of choices of notes and things like that.
Yeah.
And I could say that about some of the stuff on Sad Wings of Destiny.
You could pretty much say about any Priest album if you really wanted to go there, but that's what makes him Priest, I suppose. Huh?
Well, let's go back to the beginning and we'll kind of do a little bit of history of Priest and how they got together and take us all the way up to this album. The story begins with the original singer, Al Atkins, who started a band named Judas Priest when the bassist of his band suggested that name, stealing it from the Bob Dylan song, The Ballad of Frankie Lee and Judas Priest, from his John Wesley Harding album.
Al Atkins owns a car dealership down near Queen Creek.
Does he now?
Yes, he does.
We got hot dogs and balloons for the kids. Come on down. There's Sody and there's clowns.
They got a herd of Winnebagos. They're giving them away.
No interest down. 90 days, same as cash.
Bring in your clunker. $1,500 guaranteed, Al Atkins. Queen Creek, Arizona.
That's right. Well, the band went through some, Al Atkins' band went through some personnel changes, including the guitarist who died in a car accident or suicide. They're not sure which.
Wow.
That seems like a pretty varying, like the pendulum swings a great distance to between those two activities. But
so suicide by car? Like, drove off a cliff?
Could
perhaps.
Be. I once knew a guy that was driving down the road and he tried to kill himself with his car. He doused himself in gasoline.
That's right. I forgot about that.
He doused himself in gasoline and ran into a wall, but he lived. And the cops found him and like took him out and like, why is there an empty gas can? He's covered in gas with a freaking lighter in his hand.
And he fucked that up.
I'm sorry for laughing, but I just think it's a crazy story.
That's like stabbing yourself in the chest.
He was prior to that. I know that he got
plunging
into
a dagger into your heart.
He got into a domestic dispute with his wife, and the cops came and just lit him up with those bean bags.
Oh, Jesus
the cops Christ. Have. Oh my God, what a story! That's a story for another time. That dude was crazy. Drank way too much Wild Turkey. But anyway, so. So the band breaks up in 1970, and there's a guy, K.K. Downing, who's got his childhood buddy, Ian Hill. They've been friends forever, and they wanted to start a band, and they run into Al Atkins, probably at the car dealership
down in Queen Creek, Arizona.
Yeah, we got hot dogs and soda for the kids while you shop.
Donkey rides. We got donkey rides.
That ain't no bull. Now, they decide that they want to use Al's old band name because it's cool, Judas Priest.
Fuck yeah, it's cool.
It's a great name. And they end up moving away from the sort of bluesy stuff of that English guys were all into in the late 60s and early 70s.
Man, right.
And they start playing heavy rock. And they end up opening up for Budgie and Thin Lizzy and Trapeze.
Ooh.
All around this period.
Big bands, big in the rock blues.
Yeah.
Circuit.
So Al.
Bispo Nash and the bands.
Yep. Al and the drummer wind up quitting the band to open up a car dealership in Queen Creek. Now, Ian Hill, the bass player, is dating this girl who suggests that, hey, you should get my brother to sing in the band. And that brother's name is Rob Halford.
By dating, you mean banging.
Banging, yes. Now, Rob had his own band called Hiroshima at the time, but right. I guess they weren't doing a whole hell of a lot.
They bombed.
They.
Oh, Jesus. Thank you.
Yes, bravo.
Turn his mic off. So Rob joins the band and brings along his drummer from Hiroshima with him. And so that's the four-piece.
He was in bandages.
What? He was in bandages?
He was in bandages.
Mm-mm. It's enough out of you. So they land a record deal with Gull. Now, at this time, they're a four-piece band, but I don't know if it's at the label's insistence or management, but they're like, you should add a fifth member, another guitarist. And so enter Glenn Tipton.
Jesus, stray dog.
Yeah, right. And now running the boards for the record is this guy, Richard Bain, who's going to produce this inaugural Judas Priest record. And Richard Bain did Sabbath's first three records, and he also did a record for Budgie as well. But the experience was not so great for the band. Bain was a bit of a tyrant, so to speak, pun intended. He chose the songs from the band's repertoire, and he left out songs that were in their set that were crowd favorites when they played their little pubs and stuff.
Oh, no way.
Genocide, Tyrant, and The Ripper. He was like, nah, not good enough for the album. So those songs were already gangbusters live, and then this guy decides that those aren't strong enough. He also takes a 10-minute epic song, and he chops it down to 3 minutes, making for a very confusing last track, that Caviar and Meths.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like a weird song tacked on at the very end that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Well, it's a 10-minute epic prog song that they just took. I'll just have that part right there from it.
Can you imagine somebody chopping up, like, Give My Compliments to the Chef by Alex Harvey and going, it's a two-minute compact little, it's a firecracker. You're going to love it. You're going to love the AM mix.
Yeah, right.
You know? Fuck.
So they, of course, would write the ship for their next album, Sad Wings of Destiny, of course.
Oh, absolutely.
And
classic Priest.
You know, that one will now include the Ripper and Tyrant and all that stuff, and making that record even stronger with the addition of Victim of Changes and all that stuff.
I think most people think that's really the beginning of Judas Priest proper.
Yes, absolutely.
If you will.
Absolutely.
That, right?
So, you know, Richard Bain is the guy that's cited as the cause of rock and roll not being everything that it should have been. And it's even down to the production. The production itself is not that great. But then again, think of how great those early Black Sabbath records sounded. Not so much.
Not so much. But then again, you think about the Ripper now with better production is what it is. And maybe there's strength in that. Maybe that's sort of a fortunate little blunder. In a weird historical way, looking back, which is easy as fuck.
Meant to be.
Yeah.
They soldiered on, and you know, they would begin their routine of firing the drummer after every album, which they did. They got rid of this guy, the Hiroshima guy. He bombed, so he's out.
Yeah.
And then they got some other dude.
Done.
And then I think on Sin After Sin, they had yet another guy,
right?
Yeah,
they had a fourth guy. Four albums, four guys.
I think so.
I think it was the first four. I have to double check on that and stuff I don't remember anymore.
Yeah, so. But the rest is history. But I find this record fascinating just as an artifact, again, you know, of the early period of Judas Priest. And I enjoy listening to this record. I think I kind of like the production of it. I like the simplicity and the riffs. And it's kind of proggy in a way that's got that whole of winter. What's that whole winter bit at the end of middle?
It's a whole 9 minute and 40-something, trilogy.
The trilogy.
Earth-shattering kaboom.
Right. That's right. It's coming.
It's in there, too. And there's plenty of earth-shattering kabooms on this record. It's, you know what it is? It's fucking Priest.
Right.
And it kicks ass. And it's really raw.
I was going to play Cheater.
I was going to say that was going to be my bet.
See, I think I'm going to spin Rock the title track.
Okay, yes.
That's probably the best
pick.
Song, the best song on the record.
Sure,
Cheater
man.
Cracks me up because it's about, you know, Rob Halford comes upstairs and he sees his wife in bed with another man.
Well,
it was way before all that, maybe. I don't know. So he comes up in the second verse or something, he's talking about, like, he's got his gun now and he's going to shoot him. And he goes, well, and now you're going to get it, or now you're going to take that. And then it's like a harmonica solo. Like, check this out. It's like, that's odd.
Hey, why not a Jew's harp?
Take this. I can imagine the wife and the man, like, laughing in bed at Rob Halford, blowing harp at him.
Hey, Rob, go get us a beer.
Here's a couple of little blues riffs I was working on the way over. So, but Rock and Roll is the number one track on this album.
Right.
It's good, yeah. So let's roll that from 1974. That's on Gull Records, who ripped them the fuck off. And I've got the 1979 USA Visa label pressing of it.
Ooh.
So it's in fairly decent shape. And let's go ahead and drop the needle. Side one, track two, AD.
We'll
Yeah, Judas Priest doing the title
Priest.
Track. Yeah. Nothing wrong with the production on that. It's very 70s. I dig it.
You know, I mean, it's – but again, I don't think – Halford had really found his style of singing yet. I think he was still finding his voice.
Mm-hmm.
There certainly wasn't a lot of dual guitar present, you know, that dueling harmony thing that Priest ended up.
Right.
And,
there's
know,
not a lot.
Maiden became
there
so.
Is some on this record, which is interesting. 74. That's kind of right around Wishbone Ash.
But I mean, not certainly like laden, like it, like featured,
like it would be
Priest
later.
Became known.
Right.
For that, you know, them and Maiden for their dueling.
And you guys pointed this out. I can't believe I missed it. Bob Halford.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's credited to Bob Halford on the back.
Yeah. Well, Bob Halford, you know, he bought, again, finding his voice. There was a lot of times he sounded, during the verses especially, a lot like he took from the Johnny Rotten school of lead vocal. And sort of, hey, yeah.
Well, this would have been well before old Johnny Rotten came on the scene.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like that kind of, that whole effect, you know, it's like really punk.
Interesting.
You know? And again, sort of when metal crosses the line into punk.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Rotten had.
Well, they had, if you remember what they looked like back in the day, back in this era, it was very hippie-ish.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't K.K. Downing wearing like a Panama hat? And like Rob Halford had this blouse on with the long hair and this very kind of hippie-ish, you know?
Yeah, well, Plant, you know, think about what Plant was,
it was
looking, you know?
Zeppelin. Yeah, Zeppelin's attire.
Right, sure. Pretty trippy, though. Yeah, so it's a lot of elements of things to come that I think are pretty cool about, which makes this album, I think, so special in its own way.
Yeah, I dig it. I dig this record.
Great record, man.
All right. Well, the mystery boxes are empty.
Yes.
Can you believe it?
Oh.
Number 104 is officially in the books, A.D. Adams.
Oh, I know. I'm officially in the bag. As a matter of fact, my bottle's empty.
Oh, let's rectify that for you.
Make me one of those fireball things you made the other night.
Well, while Liz is getting AD some kind of fireball concoction, we want to take time to thank you guys very much for hanging out with us here at Shabby Road once again.
Yay! How about that?
And sharing things on Facebook and following us over there on the Twitter page, at Shabby Podcast, leaving nice reviews on iTunes for us, and you know, doing all the things that you guys do. You're awesome at it. We really appreciate it, you know, all
the
stuff you guys
do. We love the letters. Keep writing. Keep writing this. We love the correspondence. We love it when you post, like, you know, your find at the record store.
Yeah, I love that.
When you're digging through crates, man. Hey, look what I found, motherfuckers.
Yeah, don't care what it is. Just show us.
Oh, sometimes I get so pissed off because they find some great records I'm looking for, and I'm going, damn you, there's one more out of circulation.
Right.
So keep doing that.
Find us on one of those social media sites and hook us up with whatever you're up to. All right, well, Ricky Serrano, thank you, brother, for hanging out with us tonight.
You're welcome.
Doing such a stellar job working those dueling MacBook Pros over there.
Getting radiation.
You're getting a tan from both of those screens.
Ooh, thank you.
And he's brought with him that cantankerous old sod, HAL 5000.
Shut up!
Oh, what?
Hey,
Ricky's
nice.
Face.
Shut up!
Nice, Al, nice.
Shut up!
Dude, nice. Wow.
Ricky's face when he's doing that, just like.
He's so happy.
He's just grinning. He just presses a button. So great. You don't get to see it, but.
I can see him.
Oh, you can see him now?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's classic. And who's over there on that Astrovan best seat over there,
that's
AD,
Liz,
over there?
Liz Morgan, our liquid mistress, and she just poured me a what? What are you? A fire and ice.
Oh, that was what you liked the other night.
It was delicious. I'm having another one, yeah.
Right. All right, well, I guess that's it. It's time to say goodnight, yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, I'm looking across the room, across this open, carpeted transgender bathroom known as Shabby. And I see squatting over there in the corner my pal AD Adams.
Well, hang on, don't look while I'm finishing my biz. Well, as I search through the smoky mist in this heartbreak of hallowed halls, I am encouraged only by the rain outside rinsing the mud and the mung off the homeless on our front stoop, and by the smiling face of my pal and co-host, Mr. Ryan McKay.
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yes. Other than that, I'm suicidal. I don't know what the rest of you people.
Is it rainy days? Yeah. Give you the blues?
Put that Priest back on. Push me over the edge.
We should hear that song with the harmonica thing in it.
Just go out laughing.
Take this. Honk, 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 honk.
A portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is fearlessly brought to you by those crazy bastards at nameonanything.com. Use the promo code SHABBY at checkout and save 10% on your order. nameonanything.com.